Hello, welcome back, everybody. We're already having fun behind the scenes.
Yeah, that was an interesting little conversation. Why don't you tell everybody what you were just talking about, Lisa?
Well, Tyler was surprised and admired my missing phone case. So I do not have a phone case. I just have the straight like phone. And I responded to him. He's like, yeah, because I fear nothing.
Wow.
So I don't fear a crack in my phone.
As soon as we walk out, he drops it.
Probably.
Just chuck it.
Anyways, Keith, Tyler, and Lisa are back this week. And we will talk a little bit about the new old, a little bit about the conversation that you had last week. But then we also have some new conversation that I think is very interesting and timely.
You're back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was out a week. So it's not that I was gone for a month, Tyler.
Well, seems like it, Lisa.
Anyways, let's start with Two Truths and a Lie. And I brought you a little NVIDIA edition because NVIDIA was reporting earnings last week. And everyone knows that the market is looking very heavily at that. So let's get in. So NVIDIA's quarterly profit was higher than that of all 40 companies in the DAX combined.
Wow.
How many companies are in the DAX?
40.
40?
Mm-hmm. So all who do not know, DAX is the German stock index.
Lisa, with her German heritage here, is trying to trick us already to start the morning.
B, NVIDIA beats its earnings expectation for the 14th consecutive quarter. Or C, nearly 95% of NVIDIA's employees are now millionaires due to the surging stock over the last couple of years. I had to make it tougher because we had a couple of NVIDIA additions so far already over the years. So
this is good.
There's a little new information. Let's start with Tyler this time.
Oh, there we go.
I believe it is the 14th consecutive quarter, so I'd say B is true. I mean, 95% seems high, but knowing these tech semi companies in the last, 5 years since COVID, really, a lot of these companies have been paying employees in stock options. So I guess I could get behind that. Quarterly profit was higher than all 40 companies.
Combined.
I mean, the problem is you have a lot of like DAX, you're probably going to have some autos you're going to have. So like their margins are probably pretty slim. Ooh.
All right, listeners, don't fall asleep.
So sorry, I'm going to.
Let's get going.
I'm going to go with C. I don't think it's 95%. It's probably closer to like 75 or something. Right. So C is the.
I'll tighten it up here a little bit. I think we're ABC. I like that. We're back to that.
We're back to that. Yeah, but there was a lot of confusion around that.
So I'm going to, I think B is true. The 14, that seems reasonable. Tyler, I think, was kind of beating around the bush on the A, which it seems reasonable that these companies earn less than NVIDIA. So I'm saying that's probably true. And then 95% just seems like a whopping number for all the employees. I mean, you think from beginning entry level to more senior, I'm sure there's a lot of them. I think 95 is too high, and it's probably Tyler's probably somewhere right in that 75, 80-ish% maybe.
Unfortunately, you got me this time. Yeah, it's not 95%. It's more 79.
Wow, we racked it pretty good. 75, 80. Wow,
that's good.
I thought I'd get you with A, but no, that's actually true.
Okay.
Anyways, to stay with NVIDIA for a little bit, NVIDIA did it again. Blockbuster earnings. Revenue beat on everything. Data center, hyperscale, AI clouds, industrial and enterprise, all like whooping numbers and high year-over-year growth numbers. Earnings per share also knocked out of the ballpark, 1.87 versus 1.76 estimated. Gross margin, 75%. This is like eye-watering just as it is. They also authorized $80 billion in stock buybacks and increased their dividend by 2,400% to 25 cents from...
That's beaten inflation.
Yeah, right. So pretty sharp increase. I mean, they barely had a dividend before, but now it's 25 cents a share. And yeah, I mean, when you look at the next 12 month P ratio, it still looks kind of reasonable compared to over the last 5 years, given what Nvidia is showing. I mean, the market kind of expected it. And we heard from all the other Magnificent Seven hyperscalers, a lot of the customers for Nvidia, they had all blown out earnings numbers. So, okay, kind of what else should there be, right? So it was kind of expected. The stock price reaction for the week was a little lower. It was down about 3%, which is interesting because I asked myself, okay, what does the market actually expect now? I mean, they're knocking it out every single quarter, but it seems like it's still not enough anymore.
I mean, here's the thing is, I don't think, I mean, going back to last week, Keith and John were right on the after report. Right. Yeah, nice. I was wrong. It did trade down, only about like 1.5%.
That was down.
I think what's interesting to me is they crushed earnings, and the whole market is basically riding on Nvidia crushing earnings. Because if Nvidia came in and said, oh, hey, we actually missed or we're in line, I think
you would
have a very, very, very different reaction from the market as a whole, because now the market's been trading up. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they get a lot of credit for their CPU business. What I also think is interesting is the buyback and dividend, because you start to get into that discussion of the whole point of Nvidia and chips and technology is they reinvest their money and try to do R&D and try and develop the next best thing. And you start to get into this conversation that I've been thinking about the last couple of days is, are they becoming this like cash cow where they don't even know what to do with their money at this point? And that's when you start to see the slowdown-ish.
But you also saw it with Meta when they were initiating a dividend, I think 2 years ago, and it was not taken that well by the market.
Because the whole point is like,
do you not know what to do with your money anymore? Why mm-hmm. are you paying it? Like, usually it's good when companies are starting or raising their dividend. But if a growth company starts to initiate one, that could be in the beginning kind of a little bit question marks. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I'll start with just the stock reaction. I think everybody expected a beat and raise. So you kind of get that muted reaction, which is what happened. What surprises me is that quarter and the valuation, I think you got 21 times. You look at the out year number, I think it's like 18 times. It's growing still 40%. So,
which is crazy
at those law of large numbers, right? And we talked about this a year ago. At some point in time, they grow so big, so fast, your largest company out there, things do slow down. And I think why the stock's not reacting any more positively is, you know, unfortunately, it's the largest company out there. So it's roughly 8% plus in the S&P 500 as a weighting.
Mm-hmm. So everybody owns it.
That's what I was just going to say. So incremental buyers, there's probably less of that.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I don't quite understand why. I get the large, but it's kind of been used as a little bit of a piggy bank for buying other semiconductors. So this week, after last week, a little bit of sell off, we saw a little more continued sell off. Whereas the SOX, the overall semiconductor index, is up probably about 50% now, whereas Nvidia is probably now 15% year to date. And just the other day, we saw like Micron up 21%. Qualcomm's been up. Monster had a slight pullback, and then it's up another 10-12%. So it seems to me, I think what's happening is, I don't know if it's hedge funds or a positioning of people basically taking Nvidia down a little mm-hmm. bit and using those proceeds to buy some more aggressive names.
And you did that too in your portfolios.
Yes and no. I added to semis, mm-hmm. but I'm still more of a, I own.
You're not overweight Nvidia.
Yeah, no. So I added a little bit of Nvidia, still under that 8% kind of mark. Broadcom I added to, you know, Lam's been a good holding. But the whole, I think it's up to about 19% of the S&P 500's in semiconductors. I think we're getting a little bit over our skis. And I think what's going to end up happening, you're seeing, like I said, those big guys that had a great last couple of years, NVIDIA, Broadcom, to some extent, they seem like they're kind of plateauing. Mm-hmm. Whereas these other ones that are kind of the new up and comers, mm-hmm. that are up, they're up 10, 15, 20% a day. Yeah. I've seen this movie before and I think it ends kind of poorly for those kind of names. And I think, I don't know when that is. I think it's sooner rather than later that those kind of names will start pulling back and then everybody will say, oh, Qualcomm's still the king, and or not Qualcomm, excuse me, NVIDIA's still the mm-hmm. king, and Broadcom is certainly right there as well. I think you'll see that kind of maybe rotation back into those steady, because they're more those steady eddy core holdings, and I think some of this other stuff kind of gets sold down.
To your point, so SOC or SMH, which is a VanEck semiconductor ETF that tracks semiconductors. I mean, it's up. So just looking at the chart, March 30th was the low for year to date. So which is actually lower than it started the year, mm-hmm. was March 30th, which means year to date, it's up 61%, which means it's up more than 61% since March 30th.
And then you got to remember,
which is a month and a half.
Mm-hmm. In that time frame, if you probably pulled up in that Broadcom and NVIDIA in that last since March, 31st, they're certainly not up 61%. So the big guys in that weighted index are, probably up, if I had to guess, less than 20. So that means the rest of the indexes are probably up about 80%. I guess that's kind of the point being, I think you're starting to see those.
The smaller ones, yeah.
Smaller ones, and it's the whole CPU, GPU, you see Intel's, they're barely,
a couple of years.
I mean, I would throw that in the camp of you're getting a little more speculative, I guess, is the ultimate thing. So it's people are rotating out of the big guys. Because
Qualcomm itself had a bad earnings report.
Yeah, bad earnings, bad guidance. And
but yet no one seems to care.
Because they mentioned AI, which they were never considered part of the AI play. Now they are. So
AI mentioned.
Yeah, I mentioned.
I mean, do you think like a Micron can continue to go up 16% every day?
No, I don't.
Like yesterday, like what UBS tripled their price target just because.
So one of the sell side analysts said literally their job is to cover 6-10 industry stocks, and they should be, again, we're all generalists here, mm-hmm. so we have opinions on a lot of different things, but they cover 5-10 names, and they took the price target up from like $550 to $1,600.
You don't see that every day.
So that's a threefold X increase in price target.
It's high conviction.
That's like, I've been wrong in the stock, so I might as well just go for the moon at this point.
That's kind of what it seems to me. And
usually when these Wall Street guys start to do that.
That's what I mean. You're getting towards the, I think, the tail end of this mm-hmm. kind of movement. And that could be, I still back up that I think we're in the middle, early innings of AI expansion. That's why people are getting hyped about it. But I do think there's something that's going to happen that this latest
there's round of. We talked about it last week, like supply constraint. Like Qualcomm cannot grow their earnings by 600% over the next year to 2 years.
Yeah, no, I agree. So we're in a little bit of, it makes me, again, I'm very positive on the market. I think we still grind higher from here. We're in the early innings of AI, but I think there's pockets that are like, mm-hmm. you kind of want to avoid them. But if you're not in them, you're kind of missing out, and it's kind of a painful.
Yeah, I mean, G50, we sold Qualcomm and Flex, and I thought we were at the top.
That was just a few days ago, right?
Pulled back, which I was feeling pretty good about that trade, and also now we're back at all-time highs on those stocks.
Yeah, I think you did the exact right thing to do, but in the very, very short term, right?
It sucks.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it stinks, especially when you owned them.
And then you see them going to the moon, and you're not part of it anymore, but you will feel good probably in a couple of weeks again.
That's what I'm thinking.
So it's the, I saw a new acronym yesterday. So it's FOMO, right? The fear of missing out.
Which is the inset series of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was someone introduced FEMO, which is fear of earnings momentum.
I've never heard that before.
So that was the new one. Earnings are great. And that's the other thing back in this whole getting away from NVIDIA and these other things is the S&P, the guidance for this year for the consensus was about 18% EPS growth. Now I think it's at 21 after the first quarter earnings.
This is insane. Like
out of a recession. No. This is out of, pretty good multiple years that we're accelerating that fast.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you're seeing it across the board too, though. Like yesterday, what was that? Eaton was up like 5%. So you're starting to see the derivative plays as well.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, as an investor, I think I prefer to be that because they have ultimate other lines of business in case this piece gets a little too extended. So,
yeah. And Keith, you mentioned before, like the difference between CPU and GPU. There's a lot of talks about that at the moment. Like what company is, you know, the leader in what area? What does it actually, what is actually the difference and what does it mean? So Tyler, can you talk a little bit, because it was also discussion for NVIDIA for their earnings, because they're the leader, the world leader in GPU, which was very important to train all of these models and to get going. Now there is a shift. And the question is, oh, will NVIDIA will be the leader in the CPU space as well, which we already have some main players here. So can you explain a little bit for our listeners what the difference is and why there is a shift now, how we look at these chips and what they are should be capable doing?
Well, I mean, CPUs are your general computer chips. They're in your iPhones, your basically anything is what
processing.
It's the most generic chip out there. And then the GPU is your graphic processing unit. And that's where the powerful part comes from, which is why NVIDIA is with AI and the amount of computing processing power that they need. That's where the GPUs have come in. So what's interesting though is, so the reason all of these semiconductor stocks have been ripping the last, what, 6-7 weeks is there was a report that came out that you need eight CPUs to one GPU now, basically, which great. But I think NVIDIA, Keith and I were on panels the day after earnings, and you talked about this a little bit, I think. What's interesting though is I don't think NVIDIA is getting credit for the amount of business that they do in CPUs.
Yeah.
Because you talk about, they do, what was it, $20 billion in revenue, which out of their-
That's what the forecast for the full
That's
year.
The forecast, yeah.
Out of their total revenue, it's not like it's a meaningful amount, but you're starting to talk about them being the leaders in the CPU business, which no one really discusses.
And they have like a new chip, like the Vera Rubin chip, which is a combination of both.
It's a platform. Yeah. So the Vera is their CPU. Rubin is the GPU. But they're just not getting credit for it. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing these stocks trade like Intel trade at 70 times earnings. And Intel is known for their CPUs. Mm-hmm. And they're rivaling in Intel in CPU revenue. And I would venture a guess, and this is somewhat out of my realm, but I would venture a guess that NVIDIA knows what they're doing with CPUs as well, and probably just as powerful, if not more powerful than Intel can do. So it's just an interesting dynamic, but yeah, I mean, CPUs and GPUs are the powerful part, and CPUs are the computing power behind it.
Yeah, you're seeing a lot of demand for CPUs of like Claude, the stuff that's doing the processing once, you know.
Which is where the 8-to-1 comes in because they just need that.
Because it's not AGI, like agentic which is different from just a chatbot answering question to them doing stuff for you,
We've been in this realm of agentic AI for a while now, right? So AGI is kind of this current regime of AI. What they're trying to build to is artificial general intelligence, which is where the whatever it is, whether it's robotics, the chatbot, anything that you can use on a daily basis is just as smart as a human. So right now, agentic AI, basically they have a lot of hallucinations where you're not going to get the right answer. They get you somewhat, I mean, they're obviously it's very good. They can read the internet in a matter of 5 seconds and give you up-to-date information. But what's a little bit different is artificial general intelligence is where they're as smart as humans. They don't have the emotional intelligence. So that's going to be used much more in like robotics, and just the amount of computing power that it's going to have is going to allow us to do like the autonomous driving on a larger scale. And then the next phase is artificial super intelligence, where they're smarter than humans and they also have the emotional intelligence. And so that's really where all of these. So all of the CapEx, yes, they're improving the models, but that's really where they're trying to drive the rest of AI, is to get to the next phase. And then once they get to that phase, then it's a next phase after
which
that.
Is still very theoretical at this point.
ASI is still very theoretical. AGI is not.
Keith, anything to add on this?
No, it's a lot of NVIDIA AI. I mean, the point being is...
That's why when we say like second, third inning, that's why we say that, is because there's still a lot more to come.
Yeah, and Sorry, I didn't interrupt you. No, that's fine. It's just, that's where we as investors are trying to pick the spots going forward. And that's what, you know, the disconnects and kind of, does it make sense? Does it not? That's kind of stuff we talk about all the time, and what we should be looking at. Not at least anything on the quarter that kind of surprised you, or a stock reaction on from your side of things.
From NVIDIA now?
Yeah.
Now the only thing that surprised me was the dividend increase or initiation, basically, they paid a penny. So it's basically nothing.
But a dollar. So it's 50 basis points. That's crazy. Not a bad dividend.
And like the buyback, that was kind of my only surprise that I didn't expect to see. But other than that, yeah, beat and raise. Yeah. I think by now people are just used to it. Decent.
Yeah, it's 50 basis points. So I mean, that's not.
Well, plus the buybacks, you're probably talking.
Oh yeah. Plus, yeah.
75 basis points.
So you look at.
Still not maybe interesting for an income investor that are looking for a dividend, but
but now you can get considered.
More interesting.
Kind of reminds me of, back to your point of Apple, of how when they first introduced, right? It's like, so NVIDIA is becoming a mature company. Doesn't mean it can't grow anymore. No, it probably doesn't. I think the hyper growth state
is probably over.
Over or behind it, right? And then Apple was the same way, 5-7 years ago, and it's still remained number one for the longest time until NVIDIA passed it, which is still performing well.
But maybe that's where you get the concern on the quarter, is they just don't know what to do with the money at this point. Like the R&D, the law of improvement. What is it?
Moore's Law.
Moore's Law, that's what it is. Like the doubling, right? Maybe NVIDIA's at that point where they just, Moore's Law is no longer taking over, and you just start to see that slow in R&D.
Yeah, and you've certainly seen them invest in a lot of, I would say, non necessarily core competencies, or so these partnerships and different things. So I think they're taking that cash and kind of shooting their shots on different areas.
That's where investors start to get concerned.
For sure. That's kind of, you know, Meta's done in the past, and there's reasons for concern.
Okay. So speaking of earnings and changes.
Oh.
there is a new, so the SEC, that's my second topic for today, because I think it's very interesting. The SEC.
Stay with us, listeners.
If you made it that far, stay with us. We don't talk semis anymore. So anyways, the SEC proposed a new proposal for companies to not be required to report quarterly earnings anymore, but more semi-annual. This is not a requirement. This would be voluntarily, so they can choose if they still go for quarterly or if they do semi-annually, which in the US, it's tradition for over 50 years that companies report their earnings on a quarterly basis. That's why we also often talk about that, because quarterly we get new insights into companies' numbers and outlook and guidance. So the question is, what are some actual thoughts about this? Benefits, disadvantages, and is this so-called solution really looking for a problem that no one really asked for, no one really had? So Keith, I start with you. What are some advantages?
Yeah, pros and cons.
Maybe going to semi.
As an investor, I certainly rather see more than less. So I would like quarterly earnings like they are. Now, if I was running a company, I would probably lean the other way of saying less disclosure, that I potentially would make better longer term investment decisions as a management of a company if I didn't have to worry about some investor kind of berating me for missing a quarter, or, you know, so that there's both sides of the argument. Not just because you are investing longer term and not having to report quarterly earnings doesn't necessarily mean you're for sure run your business better. I think you could probably plan a little bit better for longer term if you don't have to worry about every quarter all of a sudden you invested too much. Now you explain why you missed your earnings. It hits the stock, which hits your shareholders, which more than likely hits their own pocketbook, right? So I think those are the two simple arguments. For me as an investor, I like to see more information. And then as a company, my guess is a lot of them probably wouldn't mind going to annual kind of publications.
Well, I mean, you see it with the international companies, like European companies specifically, they do semi-annual reports, but then they'll do what they call trading updates. So you'll get like a revenue, they'll update you on where the revenue's at and then maybe the different segments and then give some general commentary around where they think the first half or second half of the year is going. To Keith's point, it's not as much disclosure as what we get now, obviously, because they have to report financials, whereas the trading updates, they just kind of give you a few line items and call it a day. So from an investor standpoint, I would agree with Keith. I would like to see quarterly reports, but again, I guarantee you the management team would rather see semi-annual.
Yeah, semi-annual or...
Or annual, yeah.
Annual, right? Because it's just less work too, right?
I'm sure
compiling time and effort, that's not an easy of it.
You're not from the company, and maybe it's good for investors too. I mean, from the investor standpoint, we like to see quarterly. The problem that there's a disconnect because the management team should be making long-term decisions, but they're so focused on the quarters themselves and trying to beat the quarters than they are on the actual long-term focus of the company. So
that is an interesting point that you just mentioned, because that was one of the arguments of ditching it, that management teams should be focused more on long-term rather than just beating every quarter and just focusing on short-termism, but kind of planning more R&D more for the long-term. The thing is, and you mentioned that as well, Tyler, that, so this is not out of the ordinary, because for European companies, that is pretty much the norm. UK introduced it in 2013. Also voluntarily that companies can choose. It took a while until companies actually did it, because I think no one wanted to be the first, because then it's like, okay, something is fishy with you. Or what are they hiding when you
kind of... I think that's the fear on the investor side.
But the other thing is... So by now it's pretty much the norm that they're doing semi-annual. And they did like some analysis on R&D spending and all of that of these companies, because that could be an indication of management teams thinking more long-term and planning more long-term and increase in R&D spending and more long-term thinking. And they found that there was zero evidence for it. Zero impacts on R&D spending, zero increase. Which basically counteracts the argument, hey, ditch quarterly earnings for semi-annual to counteract this short-term thinking. And also it's like, how much difference does it make for long-term thinking to basically do it every 6 months instead of every three? Does that really make such an impact for long-term thinking? I don't think so. And again, like we have like a precedent case here from the UK, where it's evident that there is zero impact. So the long-term thinking argument is kind of a little bit a little bit done. And then you would have to, the other argument, okay, what is with the costs, right? Because I mean, for large companies, they are set up with compliance and everything. It's probably not as painful for them, but especially for smaller companies, that can be huge impact on costs. And the SEC estimated that semi-annual reporting instead of quarterly could save a combined $236 million in net compliance annually and $97 million in paperwork.
Now the question is, do you think we go down this road? Does it happen?
Right. And it's like, that's the argument. First, it should reduce cost and subsequently also induce IPO activity, because we have like a reduction of companies over the last decades, right? From 8,000 publicly listed companies to about 4,000 right now. Smaller companies might kind of sit on the fence of not wanting to do that because of the costs, which is also kind of a weird argument if that is really the reason they are not filing for an IPO, or it's more like, because as we talked in prior episode, it's more like the funding possibilities they have with private credit and private equity. I think that's probably more the reason. So I'm not so sure about the arguments being really that,
I think it'd have to be industry by industry. And the reason I say that, so McDonald's, for example, do we really need quarterly earnings on McDonald's? Probably not. Do we need quarterly earnings on a biotech stock? Probably. Right? Mm-hmm. Like those are two very different companies and very different business models and very different trends. So you have a biotech company that's going through trials. If they have a trial coming up at the beginning of the year and you don't hear about it until July.
Yeah. I mean, such small biotech companies, right? They can like... Their performance can change like 60% of the trials.
You know what McDonald's is. They've been around for a long time. Yes, on a quarter to quarter basis, do you see some trends swing? Sure, same store sales changes, but on a semi-annual basis, like you're probably getting the same information. Whereas biotech.
But you get a lot of seasonality, first of all, also with the aviation industry, right? You get a lot of seasonal things. You get a lot of data on the economy, how the consumer is doing, where the consumer is spending, the consumer is not spending anymore. You get a lot of initial first flaws that you might see coming up with McDonald's, with Walmart, with how are they spending flight tickets or economy versus premium and all of that, right? There's a lot of data that you can extract from that, which goes way beyond just a company.
Yeah.
That gives you indication fair. for the overall economy.
I don't think it's going to happen.
You don't think it's happening?
The changing? No. Yeah. I think it will stay quarterly. And then okay. I think to Tyler's argument, I think if you can't just go industry, even though it may be more important for some industries, I think it's all or none. And then
the way they proposed it now is they put all in the same boat. Yeah.
And then I think that's, and the follow last point is, I do think if we would switch to more annual than semi-annual, is the implications are for the stock market, you have these bigger surprises. Yeah. So I think that could add some monster volatility into, especially like you said, a biotech.
Around the event
of that report could all of a sudden, we have a lot of volatility anyway around earnings. Mm-hmm. I think you just magnify that, which I don't know if that's such a great thing.
I mean, and also some of these
small caps you have, they might be down 15% in a quarter. Next quarter, they might be down another 15. So all of a sudden you do it on the annual, in one day. You're talking 30, 40%.
Yeah, or their business model is not working and you're down 80%. Right. Yeah.
Right. So it's also like the transparency to your point and investor protection, but also like and that's maybe another part on the cost argument that they are saving that much cost. First of all, they are set up, the large ones at least anyways, compliance wise and stuff. Second of all, it's also a benefit not only for investors, but for the company itself, because it reduces their cost of capital. Because investors might be more willing to pay a little bit more, but knowing what's going on rather than just, you know, mm-hmm. the uncertainty adds to risk, increases the cost of capital. So again, it's also a benefit for companies to keep their investors informed, because that's at the end what they have to do. So
stay tuned.
I don't know. So anyway, it is proposed. So now both sides have time to bring their arguments and then there will be a decision. So we will be back on when we will have a decision. But another question that I want you to ask before we wrap up, Keith, if this would be introduced tomorrow and companies would jump the gun and say, okay, we were waiting for this, we are going to semi-annual right now, what would change in how you look at companies and how you make decisions?
That's a good question. Again, we look at company fundamentals that drive your investment decisions. So if you have less information, I'd probably get a little more conservative in my investing style. I'm a Garpy guy anyway, kind of growth at a reasonable price. I would probably even have a little bit more of a bias to just titch a little bit that way. So could miss some growth opportunities. I think for me personally, that's probably how it impact me. Again, it'd be marginal, but not, you know, change it in my whole investment process.
Tyler?
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely going to give a discount to companies in general, right? Maybe that's part of the structural reason why Europe is so much cheaper than the US, is you just don't have the transparency of information, and you're taking on a lot more risk to invest in these companies because you don't know exactly what's going on. Yeah, you get the trading updates where you get revenue and their specific business lines, but you don't actually get to see what cash flows are. You don't get to see what earnings are. You don't get to see margins. Like there's a lot of information that you're missing. So yeah, I mean, you're definitely going to give a discount to some of these companies, and to Keith's point, you're probably going to see volatility around those events to the upside or downside.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, there is for sure something that can be done better when it comes to quarterly reporting, that it's less stringent maybe, and maybe a little bit made a little bit easier in some ways. So it's a little bit of relief for the companies who are preparing it, but investors still getting enough information that is maybe a little bit more than just a trade update or whatever. Anyways, stay tuned. We will be back with a decision on this and a little bit more analysis when we know more. And with that, thank you so much for joining us, and be back next week. Thank you.
Investing involves the risk of loss. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be regarded as personalized investment advice or relied upon for investment decisions. Jeremy Bryan, Tyler Ellegaard, Keith Gangle, Lisa Schreiber, and David Ama are employees of Gradient Investments, LLC, and may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. All opinions expressed by them and their guests are solely their own opinion and do not reflect the opinion of Gradient Investments, LLC. Please consult your independent investment advisor before making any investment decisions. The information herein is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the sole basis for making an investment decision. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. For more information, please request a copy of Gradient Investments ADV Part 2A. Gradient Investments LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor.